You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the American Hour, and we've got a great show lined up for you. Tonight, Paula Lazone, who is my co-host, is going to be out for a few weeks due to some work logistics, and we've got filling in for us none other than the famous John Pair. John, I've known you for quite some time. You helped on my congressional campaign, and we're just indispensable. And a sharp, sharp young man. You were just finishing up your senior year of high school. Tell the folks a little bit about yourself, what's going on in your life, and how you got involved in politics.
Well, thanks, Tom, and it's great to be here again. I'm John Pair, and I am currently attending Auburn University in Auburn, Alabama. I just finished up my freshman year. It's absolutely great to be here. I've had an interest in politics since I was a young kid. Oh, I grew up a Republican, believed in the ideology, believed what it stood for. You know, I had some great experiences over the course of my life in politics. When I was 15, I was an intern for former Congressman Tom Feeney. Once that election was over with, actually, Commander Tom Garcia jumped in that race in the Republican primary, and immediately, you know, liked his views and his standpoints on major issues, and you know, jumped on that campaign real quick, and we had a good go at it, and became good friends, and here I am. So we'll
You know, I remember John. I think you called first my campaign manager Kim Carroll, and I get this call saying, "Hey, John Pair, the youngest intern in congressional history and had supported Tom Feeney, he just called up and said he wants to endorse you." And I thought, wow, cool, he wants to endorse me. And then I found out you actually wanted to get involved in the campaign, and you got heavily involved, and that was just a blast. It was a pleasure working with you, and you got some other kids involved at different times, which I know is hard, you know, to be a senior in high school with all the stuff you've got going on. It's not an easy thing, and yet you clearly understood what was going on in politics and the position and situation our country is in, our state was in, our district at the time. And it's an amazing thing to see young people want to get involved to that level. So I was highly impressed with everything that you did. And understand, somebody told me the other day that you've got like a 3.9 grade point average in your freshman year at Auburn.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's awesome.
Not too bad.
Okay, well, while we wait for our guest to call in, and our guest tonight is Dave Weldon, Dr. Dave Weldon, former congressman for the great state of Florida and now running for the U.S. Senate. As we wait for him to call in here, I want to cover a couple things. First of all, Twitter. If you're not on Twitter, get on Twitter. Believe me, it is one of the quickest, easiest ways to find out the best news that you're not going to get from the mainstream media, even Fox News. I'm serious. I have a list within Twitter of people that I follow that are always pumping information out there, and I get, and they pump links out to articles that I never would have found on my own, And so last night, for example, I retweeted. In other words, I passed on these great, fantastic tweets. Some of them are just opinion, but a lot of them have links and are great sources of information that you'll never find in the mainstream media. So you can actually get a very good briefing on stuff that eventually will hit the mainstream media, but in a lame way. You can get a great briefing from just being on Twitter. So if you go to The American Hour, look for The American Hour on Twitter, you're going to find the stuff that I tweet out, the stuff that I retweet. Great source of information, and we are just almost about to hit 7,000 followers on Twitter for the American Hour. Facebook now, we are approaching 2,000 likes and fans and whatever you want to call it these days. So our Facebook page also, I love putting cartoons on there. When I say cartoons, you know, political cartoon, still cartoon, that makes an important point. Sometimes I'll put a little commentary on there, maybe even a link to an article, etc. So Facebook, you got to look for us on Facebook. It's the American Hour Radio Show on Facebook. Again, a great source of information, but the majority of the information, you really want to find out what's going on, follow us on Twitter. Check in with Facebook. If you are a member of Facebook and you haven't hit our like button, please do that. Help us get up to 2,000, and then we'll kind of continue from there. But it really does help spread the word.
Hey, Tom, we got Dave Walden in.
All right. Well, before we bring Dave on, I'm just going to say one last thing to everybody out there. Next week, we've got another great guest coming on, Congresswoman Sandy Adams, representing a U.S. Congresswoman from the great state of Florida, District 24. She's going to be on the show and really interested in getting some insight from her on what's going on in Washington these days. We're seeing what's going on in the news. Let's find out how that corresponds to what's really going on. In any case, let's bring our guest for the night on, Dr. Dave Walden, former congressman, now running for the Senate. How are you tonight, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's great to be on the phone with you, Tom.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to come on. And, you know, I want to start off by giving you a chance to let everybody know, how do they connect with you? Where are you on the web? I'm sure you got a website, Facebook, Twitter, that kind of stuff. And then give us a little bit about your background and why you decided to get in the Senate race.
Well, they can connect with me by going to DaveWaldenForSenate.com, and then I've got on there, I've got all the links to Facebook and Twitter. That's just my name, Dave Walden for Senate, FORSENATE.com. I'm a former member of the House. I served in the U.S. House for 14 years. I got elected from the Melbourne area of the Space Coast. I was part of the Gingrich Revolution, the first Republican Congress that was elected in 40 years back in 94. I served 7 terms and I retired. I had enough of Washington. I wanted to go back to my medical practice. And basically, it's gotten worse since I left. We've got these incredible deficits. We've got the Constitution under assault. We've got the Obama health care plan. And I had lots of people, conservative people, come to me. In my area, people in Washington, they thought we needed a real authentic conservative like me, pro-life, pro-family, somebody who believes in the Constitution, somebody who believes in the sanctity of human life to get in this field so people would have a choice. And it's sort of evolving into a race between me and Connie Mack, with Connie Mack having, you know, the Republican establishment behind him.
Okay. Well, you know, you had a great reputation. You know, I moved to Titusville quite a bit after you had left. Tom Feeney had already served a term, and now Suzanne Cosmas was representing the Space Coast. And then, of course, with the changes of the districting, I think what the district used to cover came up further north like the new district does. But Bill Posey pretty much has, I think, the district, most of the district that you used to have. And your reputation was far and wide. I mean, everybody knew Dave Walden everywhere I went, and you had a great reputation as conservative and as a Republican congressman. And you mentioned just a few minutes ago that things have gotten worse. During your 14 years in the House, of any of the presidents that were president at the time, have you ever seen a president stretch the powers of the executive branch the way this current president is doing?
Oh, absolutely not. You know, I would much rather have a Republican conservative president like Ronald Reagan. George Bush was much better than Clinton. He was a much better president than Al Gore would have ever been. But I would rather have Bill Clinton any day than Barack Obama. I always thought that Bill Clinton had at least some respect for the Constitution and limits of power. And whereas Barack Obama, it's whatever he can get away with, he's going to do, as long as he thinks it's right, no matter what the Constitution says, no matter what the traditional interpretation of separations of powers. This latest immigration decision of his is a great example of that. I don't think he has the legal authority to do what he just did. But yet he just goes ahead and does it. And of course the health care bill has all kinds of assaults on the Constitution, and Barack Obama, I think, is going to be a one-term president. I think he's going to be gone. I don't believe a lot of these polls that show it close. I think the polls are inaccurate. And the other thing on him is the intensity issue. A lot of his supporters are blasé about supporting him, whereas the people who want to get rid of him are very, very upset with him, and they're going to show up. And a lot of what drives this is turnout. But Barack Obama is the worst president that I've ever seen in my lifetime.
Well, I would absolutely agree with you on that. So now let's turn to one of the worst senators in the Senate, which is who you're trying to take out, and that's Bill Nelson of Florida. This guy will just blow with the wind. Whatever it seems helps him out. Floridians are disgusted with him. What's your read as you travel around the state and talk with Floridians about getting rid of Bill Nelson and also how you see yourself undoing some of the stuff that he's done and making an actual difference in the Senate, whereas he just kind of floats along and toes the party line all the time?
Well, I liken Bill Nelson to the guy who, you know, you're lost in the woods and somebody gets up and says, you know, you're running low on food, you're running low on water. Somebody gets up and says, let's go this way. And Bill Nelson says, we can't go that way. We might die. But Bill Nelson has no solution to get us out of the woods. He is offering nothing, zero, to get this economy going again. He supported that stimulus bill. It has made matters worse, not better. Unemployment went up last month, and then he is doing absolutely nothing to rein in the explosive growth of entitlement programs and deficit spending. And we cannot survive as a nation of people borrowing $1.4 trillion a year. Eventually, either our dollar will be worth nothing, or the people who are loaning us money will control our country. And they'll come in just like the Germans are trying to do to the Greeks right now, saying, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do that. That's the path we're walking down. And Bill Nelson is doing nothing. He is voting to make it worse. That's why his polling numbers are down. He's vulnerable. The reason I believe I'm the better candidate, as opposed to Connie Mack, to go up against him, is because I can argue these issues much more effectively. And I know Bill Nelson, and he knows me. As a matter of fact, as soon as I got in this race, he sent out a fundraising letter saying that he's just drawn a new opponent, and he described me as somebody from the radical right. And I want to thank Bill Nelson for calling me a conservative, because that's what I am. I am a conservative. I believe in balanced budgets. I believe in limited government. I believe in the right to life. I believe in the sanctity of marriage. And the reason Bill Nelson is worried about me and he's trying to raise money off of me getting in the race is because he ran as a pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, limited government, conservative Democrat in 1978, and he was my congressman, and I know that. And then he flip-flopped on all those things. He abandoned the fundamental issues that the people who got behind him, and I know some of those people, and they regretted getting behind Bill Nelson, and they're sending money to me, many of those people now. And so I think the matchup, Dave Weldon versus Bill Nelson, is a matchup where we win. Connie Mack, I don't know. I really don't know if he can pull it off. I don't know if he can motivate people. He's kind of moderate on some of the life issues, and I don't know if people will turn out.
Yeah, well, I know he's moderate on the immigration issue. I've seen some really, I'm just going to pick on one subject. I'm not making a statement about Connie Mack other than the statements I've seen him make on immigration, illegal immigration, are ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. He's clueless on that subject. But aside from that, let's talk about the economy. And, you know, there are a lot of aspects. I mean, the economy is a very complex thing, but every time I see somebody talking about how we've got to, get our spending under control, unfortunately, I never see anybody talk about the executive branch. The president's latest proposal will make the executive branch the largest user of government money than any other portion of the pie. It will be larger than both Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid combined, and more than twice the size of the military. The Simpson-Bowl Commission, I went through their whole report, and I especially focused on what they talked about in the executive branch, and it was very limited. and they only talked about improving efficiency. So it was bipartisan, but they never proposed one single cut to the executive branch. Can you talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on what needs to be done to rein the executive branch in? Because we see not only the overreaching regulation, but it's costing us a lot of money. I mean, we're up to about $1.3 trillion, I think, this year. The president's proposal would have put it at over $1.4 trillion. That's a lot of money going to bureaucracies.
Oh, you're absolutely correct. Those accounts fall under something we call discretionary spending in Washington, D.C., as opposed to mandatory spending. And much of that is completely under the purview of the federal government and the president, and so everything's on the table as far as I'm concerned. I get elected, everything is going to come under scrutiny, to include all of the president's accounts and what he controls. We cannot bring this budget to balance unless we rein in the explosive growth of spending. And just as a symbol of how out of control spending is in Washington, for decades in this country, the wealthiest counties were always counties around our major cities, suburban counties around New York City and Chicago, Los Angeles. Those were the wealthiest counties. The three wealthiest counties right now are the counties around Washington, D.C., Montgomery County, Maryland, Arlington County, and Fairfax County, Virginia, the wealthiest counties. And why is that? Why has that happened? Well, traditionally, 18% of our annual gross domestic product came through the federal government. It came through federal spending. It's now, under Barack Obama, it's up to 25%. 25% of our gross domestic product is federal spending. And that's just out of control. It needs to be reined in. We need to cut taxes to get this economy going again. What we really need is fundamental tax reform, and we need to start shrinking spending from Washington. And that in and of itself, in my opinion, will help get this economy going again. You link it with some regulatory reform, repealing some of those features in the Dodd-Frank bill, which is really hurting the financial services sector in terms of their ability to loan money to the small business community. That's an engine of economic growth that we have essentially strangled for the wrong reasons. That bill should never have been signed into law. It's hurting our economy. We need less regulations. Get this economy going again. And part and parcel, you're right on target. We need to cut discretionary spending, and in particular, the programs under the control of the executive. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, and I know a lot of times people say, well, Tom, you know, you want to cut government, but, you know, that's people rely on things like welfare and food stamps. I'm not even talking about that stuff. I'm talking about the Department of Interior, the Department of Energy alone gets it's currently at $25 billion for its budget. The president asked for a 12% plus up on the Department of Energy, so putting it up, you know, in the $27, $28 billion range, and yet we've been scaling back on NASA. Now, you know NASA well, and you represented the Space Coast for a long time. I view and have always said, and I know this for a fact, you know plenty of astronauts. I know plenty of astronauts on the Space Coast or that have been there and served there in NASA. NASA is not just about space exploration. It has a lot to do with national security, things we can't even talk about, things that I can only guess about. And I've asked some of my astronaut friends, am I right on this? There are things that you could never talk about that NASA's involved in that involve national security. And they say, absolutely. It is a national security asset. But the Department of Energy, for some reason, needs more money than NASA. You want to talk about NASA for a little bit?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is, in my opinion, you know, Rome fell when the Roman economy collapsed, and Roman legions, they couldn't afford the legions anymore, and so they couldn't protect their borders, and the invading hordes came in, and Rome collapsed. You know, you look at NASA, you know, what we do with NASA, space exploration. You know, it's very symptomatic of the fundamental problems that we have as a nation in terms of our budgeting and finances, that people want to stop investing in the seed corn that generates new products, that generates jobs. And as well, you touch right on it, a lot of what they do at NASA has direct national security implications. And so, in my opinion, NASA is something that we don't want to be cutting. But yet this administration, this Obama administration, supported by, of all people, Bill Nelson, they cut the replacement to the shuttle program. We had the Ares rocket. We were going to put the Constellation capsule on it. And now our astronauts fly into space on Russian rockets. I mean, this is just unconscionable. We're the greatest country the world has ever known. Our economy is like seven times the size of Russia, but our astronauts have to fly into space on Russian rockets. We need to turn this around. And I know we can. We need new leadership in Washington. We need a new president. And yes, we need a new senator from Florida, somebody who will really fight for NASA, somebody who will really stand up for limited government, personal responsibility. I'm ready to go to Washington and do that.
Well, yeah, and no doubt we definitely, oh my gosh, we got to get rid of, Bill Nelson is just a parasite, quite honestly, in my opinion, on the taxpayer right now. And listen, I know John Pear, you may, I don't know if you've ever met John or John, if you've ever met Dr. Weldon, but he was a big supporter of Tom Feeney and an intern for him, and he's been involved in politics a long time. He's co-hosting with me tonight and filling in for my usual co-host, and we'll be doing that for a few weeks. But he went and did a little research and wanted to ask you a couple questions, so I'm going to turn it over to John.
Great. Dr. Weldon, first of all, thank you very much for being with us tonight, and I just had a couple of questions. With the exit from the race of former Senator Lemieux, you've recently said that that the voters in Florida now have a choice between two candidates, a moderate and a conservative. And I know you touched on that prior in the show, but if you could get more specific for us, what exactly separates you from Connie Mack as far as being more conservative than he is?
It's really the social issues and in particular the life issues. Connie Mack voted for federal funding for embryonic stem cell research. I argued that if that research was so potentially lucrative, then the private industry should fund it. Now, part of the reason I said that is because private industry wasn't going to fund it because it was not good research and it was not going to yield anything, and that's why all those people that wanted to do that research were coming to the federal government and asking the taxpayers to pay for it. He voted for it. I voted against it. Now, for me, it was also a life issue. You know, I joined the pro-life caucus. I was an active debater on the sanctity of human life on the floor of the House, on keeping marriage as between a man and a woman. Connie Mack was not. He'd never joined the pro-life caucus. He was never engaged. I had a 100% pro-life voting record. He did not. And really, you know, more importantly, I was active on a whole host of issues. You know, the bill that we passed in 2000 to repeal the death tax was my bill. I was, you know, we had conscience clause protections that we were able to enact under my term of service. It was called the Weldon-Hyde conscience clause protections that protected doctors and nurses from being forced to participate in abortion procedures when it violated their personal ethics and morality. I had the bill to ban human cloning. I had a bill banning patents being issued on human embryos. We had these crazy researchers. They wanted to create models of disease, and they had this vision of the future where researchers in labs were no longer working on rats and mice, but they were now working on human embryos, which I just thought was an abomination. And I made that illegal. I was successful in doing that. So I'm engaged on these issues. I fight for these issues. I have passion for these issues. My opponent does not. And really, he, in my opinion, is not the best person to go up against Bill Nelson. And I don't think it was any coincidence that I got in the field and Connie Mack announced he was not going to do any more candidate forums, and he was not going to do any more debates. And he basically said he thought the race was over. I don't think it is by a long shot. The best he does in any of the polling is in the low 40% range. And there's a good 40%, 50% of voters that are undecided right now. And I think I'm the conservative alternative for them.
So just one more question from me. Going forward in this campaign, like you just pointed out, Quinnipiac University poll came out showing 41% of Republican registered voters in Florida are supporting Connie Mack, and then the rest of the opponents are in single digits. And so you just touched on that. But what is your campaign going to do specifically moving forward? Like you said, he has the Republican establishment behind him. What can you do to try and spread your message, to try and convince voters that you are the conservative alternative?
Well, we're doing a lot of things. We're raising money. We're planning on doing some advertising. But we're relying heavily on grassroots. I was in Stewart tonight meeting with some of the members of the Republican Executive Committee and the 912 group. And they're energized. They're going to get out. They're going to start walking precincts for me. And that's basically what I'm doing. What I need to do is get the grassroots energized. From my perspective, the grassroots in Florida are kind of asleep. They're not super excited about Mitt Romney, though they're starting to get excited. And they haven't been excited about the Senate race. And the reason for that is the grassroots is mostly conservative, and they haven't had a real good, solid conservative person to get behind. And so I'm here, I'm in, I'm getting my name out, we're doing some more advertising, I'm getting on the radio. And I think, if you look at what happened in Nebraska, there was that lady who ended up winning the Republican primary, came back up from third place, there was a surge in the end. How did that happen? Why did that happen? Well, it was mostly grassroots. It was mostly
that's similar to Rick Scott,
vibes.
Similar to Governor Rick Scott's campaign.
Absolutely. So 8 weeks is a long time, but obviously it's an uphill battle. I'm not going to minimize this. The odds are stacked against me, but there have been plenty of cases in political history where guys like me have come up from behind and taken, the race and won. And what it really requires is just grassroots. People just have to get mobilized and say, this is not a coronation. This is not an anointing. We want to have a real debate. Connie Mack needs to debate me. They need to see the difference between him and me, my passion, his lack thereof, my standing on principle, my concern for the sanctity of human life, my willingness to stand up and fight for those issues. And I think if we can have that kind of debate and we can have that kind of race, I win. And I'm the best candidate to go up against Bill Nelson. And that, of course, is what this is really all about. Who is the best person to debate and take on Bill Nelson on the issues? I think that's me, Dave Weldon. It's not Connie Mack.
All right. Well,
all right.
That's all the questions for me, and I really appreciate you being with us today.
It's great to be on the show. Thank you, and you all have a great evening. God bless.
All right. Hey, just a couple quick questions. Do you have product that people can get their hands on, like pins, palm cards, signs, and things like that?
Yeah. We just dropped off a bunch of signs at the Republican headquarters in Stewart. People can go online and request things. We're also set up with an online store so that, if somebody wants a bumper sticker or a sign, they can actually order it and we'll come to their house. And we're going to be having, printings, and we're going to get things out. Best thing to do is to go online, DaveWeldonForSenate.com, or call in. I mean, they can call our campaign headquarters, 321-431-0311, and talk to Bonnie in the office. And we'll get people plugged in. We're just getting started. The ball just started rolling, and we're excited. We're energized. I'm traveling all over the state, and we think we're going to win this.
Excellent. Okay, well, Dr. Dave Weldon, thank you so much for coming on the show. Good luck with your campaign. And we'll be following this race because it is a very important race for us here in Florida, but it's a very important race for the nation. Thank you so much, and have a great night, sir.
Thank you, Tom. Bye.
All right, good night. All right, well, we're up to our Nick Taxia commentary moment and segment, and Nick is here with us now. Nick, what's been going on?
I've got, I have an unfortunate condition, Tom. I have an unfortunate condition. I have to sit on a pillow now, just to give you a clue. Last weekend, the girlfriend and I went out to Great Falls, Maryland, a beautiful section of the Potomac River. And for some reason, we were accosted by not mosquitoes, but some sort of fly that we couldn't see and we couldn't feel, but they went after our darkest clothing. They didn't go after our skin because it's lighter. They went after the dark, our dark clothing, because I guess they think it's some sort of animal or something. They go after whatever's the darkest. And I've got a butt full of bug bites, Tom.
Next time, you got to wear white pants, man. You got to wear white pants.
Well, then what? Okay, I have to wear white pants. All right, yeah, just like Mitt Romney did in the first grade. And you, if you checked out the website theprogressive.com, dusprogressive.com, you know how those turned out. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I have to sit on a pillow. If I sit on a hard surface, they begin to itch. So I have to sit on a pillow. I don't know. They went after my pants. I was wearing black pants. They went in, and my girlfriend too. We both have, you know. But with
wow,
me,
that's,
I mean,
weird.
I don't know. Even the insects in D.C. are gay.
Even
the insect, and they see me, they're like, "Oh wow, a Greek guy. Well, okay, let's go after his butt. He won't mind."
Of course, I live in Florida, as John does as well, and the mosquitoes can get pretty bad here. I've got my whole patio area screened in. Otherwise, I couldn't sit outside this time of night. I'd be eaten alive. And mosquitoes love me, and I cannot use enough mosquito spray when I travel. You know, I fly all over the Caribbean, and every island I land at and spend, you know, have a layover, I have to spray completely down with mosquito spray. Otherwise, they'll find a way to get in my room, and
yeah,
everything's sealed up and shut. And I'll wake up in the middle of the night with bites all over me, and I feel for your pain. I really do. Of course, the mosquitoes in the Caribbean are not, you know, like that. They bite anywhere on your body, so it's not just localized to one area. But in any case, so what kind of commentary do you have for us tonight?
Well, as two things. Number one, we just received a letter today at duhprogressive.com from the gentleman who, I don't know if you recognize the name, Luca Rocco Magnota, who is the Canadian gay porn actor, hence why I started out with gay insects. It's just a nice segue. You know, you get gay insects, you know, gay porn, whatever. And he murdered allegedly murdered his boyfriend, chopped up his body, and proceeded to film himself eating his brain and having sex with the severed torso. And he put that on the internet. You know, and he actually sent us a letter, and he blames Rick Santorum and Republicans for his actions. I don't know if you have time for me just to briefly go through it. It's just it's a few hundred words. If that's all right with you guys, but I don't know why this hasn't been published in the papers. As I've said all along, Tom, we here at duhprogressive.com are on the cutting edge of, you know, I want to say societal evolution. That would be stealing from Rush Limbaugh. But we're on the societal, we're on the cutting edge of societal idiocy, I guess you could say. So he says, I'm from, this is Mr. Magnota. I'm from Canada, but I still pay close attention to politics in the States. And the fact that prominent gay and lesbian haters like former Senator Rick Santorum came close to clinching the Republican nomination for president and thereby had a good chance of actually becoming president, upset me so much that I lost it. I went off the deep end. I lost sanity, okay? Mr. Santorum, you were the last straw for me. As if hating gays and gay marriage wasn't enough, you just had to run for president for America, didn't you? And seeing you do so well in the Republican primaries and endorsing the almost equally crazed Mormon cult leader Mitt Romney finally made me snap. I just had to butcher my gay Chinese lover. His name is Jun Lin, J-U-N-L-I-N, Jun Lin. I just had to butcher my Chinese lover, Jun Lin, cut him up into little pieces, eat his brain, and mail various extremities of his rotting corpse to newspapers and conservative political parties across Canada. You know, my guy, how else was I supposed to deal with your rise to prominence in the growing anti-gay sentiment in Canada's closest neighbor? It makes perfect sense to me so far, Tom. This poor man was just driven nuts. The letter goes on. If you go to dubprogressive.com and you click on the commentary section, it's up there for all to see. But just to give you a little more, it goes on. It's torturous to see your hate, he's talking to Rick Santorum, it's torturous to see your hatred gain traction, Dick Santorum. Being a proud gay non-American, I've watched with horror as anti-gay climate in the United States has grown ever more murderously hypnotic over the past few years, despite that limp noodle Barack Obama being your president. From the Defense of Marriage Act to criticizing, to citizens rejecting gay marriage every time it's put on state ballots, to Christian pastors wanting to keep gays in camps if they starve, I don't know if you heard about that, but it's linked there. It was all too much for me to psychologically handle. And America's presidential, he goes on, America's presidential elections aren't just about who governs the U.S., they're about who influences the world. That includes cultural influence, too. I think the Muslims also have a lot to weigh in when it comes to that subject over there. So I was saving Jun Lin, not murdering him. He was saving him from the rising hordes of pro-magnetic fundamentalists led by these sexually emaciated Hitlerian thugs like you, Rick Santorum, and Michelle Bachmann, Sarah Palin, Mitt Romney, and all those guys. And he goes on, the threat your views pose, even in other countries, cannot be ignored and is driving the more sensitive among us to off the cliff of normalcy. The threat from Puritans like Rick Santorum and his damn sweaters, which, by the way, look at yourself, Rick. Not only are you a genocidal hate monger, but you're a fashion disaster to boot, wearing sweaters so cheap that the damn sleeves keep falling off. So I had to murder his gay lover and eat him. He says as he goes on, he's a very sad case. This Mr. Magnota. So if you get a chance, please go to dubprogressive.com, click on the commentary, and it'll probably be in all the papers tomorrow, because he gets into a very in-depth explanation. Just the mere fact that there are people like Rick Santorum out there,
right?
Drove him
this
over.
This is how liberals react. This is how liberals react in totally irrational ways, and this is what we have to expect. If Mitt Romney gets elected, we're going to see a lot more cannibalism and other things going on the left.
face eating too. Already, this is kind of the sad part of what I do and trying to write satire is that I get some people who, no matter what you say, they'll think it's real. And the question is up on SodaHead. Ever heard of that site SodaHead? They deal only with opinions and everything. It says is gay porn star accused of murdering, eating his lover, right to blame Rick Santorum and Republicans for his actions? One person can answer it on SodaHead, Tom. This one person said, quote, typical Democrat, blaming the GOP for their own horrific cannibal gore fest.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man.
Yeah. They think it's funny. Yeah.
Well, if not only Mitt Romney, let alone a Mormon, wins, and I saw a great cartoon that a friend sent me the other day, a little political cartoon or a statement that said, I'd much rather vote for a Mormon than a moron.
Yeah.
And they used some of the Obama, you know, where it said moron, the O in moron had the Obama symbol in it. And they put a symbol similar to that, but it was more patriotic in the Mormon, the O in the Mormon thing. So, and I think this is, there was a discussion on Fox tonight about how, you know, are people going to be able to, you know, there's a percentage of people that just can't vote for a Mormon. Well, you can vote for a Marxist, socialist, moron, incompetent liar. Wow. Okay. Over a, you know, somebody
thing,
who has
the thing about the thing about liberals, though, is that they'll always find an excuse not to vote for the conservative alternative. I mean, you know, many people older people wouldn't vote for Barack Obama. But then when Joe Biden got on board as his vice president, all of a sudden they're like, well, Joe Biden's not so bad, we'll vote for him. So, you know, there's always those excuses that liberals will use to not support a conservative candidate.
Yeah, exactly. Liberals are full of excuses to support. I mean, liberals would support the devil or Osama bin Laden if they were running as a Democrat. It's got nothing to do with actual integrity, ethics, and morals. Yeah, it's all about their agenda, which is an agenda of the end justifies the means. So,
well, actually, Tom, you just touched on something. Your modern day liberal views Republicans basically. Just another type of version of Osama bin Laden. They want to take us all back, you know, 150 years, you know, reinvoke slavery, tear up that whole Emancipation Proclamation thing. They want to have women barefoot and pregnant and running around and just having rich white heterosexual Christian males as the landowners and the dominators of the great United States. That's what they think. And so basically they're on some sort of, you know, New Age holy war, I guess you could say. And
yeah.
But another one of my we broke it this week, and it's gained a lot of traction, is Mitt Romney. Apparently no one else has heard about this but me, but he chose a running mate. And speaking of various voting blocks and voting groups, he chose the New Orleans Register of Wills. In the district court, her name's Carla Martinez. She's 40, and in order to be, because we all know it's not your actual merit, it's not your actual qualifications for office, Tom. It's how diverse you are. You know, ever since Mitt Romney has clinched the nomination, you know, numerically, I've heard nothing on. How's he going to get this group? How you know, you have Chris Matthews on MSN. How's he going to get the Hispanics? How's he going to connect with women? How's he going to connect with gay? How's he going to connect? Well, he's chosen Carla Martinez, and she is young, gay, African-American female midget with Hispanic roots. She has a fake glass eye, and she has a hopelessly incurable case of irritable bowel syndrome, connecting very well with senior citizens. And in some cases, Hispanics too. In that regard, she's a 5-year. She's a 25-year resident of New Orleans. That's appealing to crime victims, combat vets, and PTSD sufferers. She is a recovering gambling addict. She used to hit. I don't know if you've ever heard this in Florida. It's been outlawed in Florida for years, Tom. But they used to have tree snail races. Illegal underground, just like, you know, cockfighting and pit bull fighting. They used to have underground tree snail races where they get two tree snails and, you know, hours would pass. And if one moved like a quarter of an inch, they would win. So she used to be addicted to that. She's a practicing Wiccan. And she explains that just for the simple fact that because she's a midget standing only 4 feet tall, she couldn't see over the pews. So she just chose to stand around in a circle. That way you can see what you're praying to. Like I said, African-American, appealing to African-American. She's gay. That's appealing to gays. Her other half-cyber family is from Barbados. Their name is Martinez. So she has a Hispanic last name. And also to appeal to seniors, she has a 66-year-old gay lover who, unfortunately, the poor woman has Alzheimer's disease, and she's been looking for the car she owned in the 1970s for the past 5 years. So
she's got all the bases covered there.
Yeah. She has a litany of qualifications for this day and age for public office, Tom. But already it's the strangest thing. I've been getting hate mail. Theprogressive.com has been getting hate mail from the three-nippled Eskimo community that has restless leg syndrome, complaining that the you know, Mitt Romney's choice for VP isn't diverse enough, Tom. So apparently he missed the three-nippled Eskimo with restless leg syndrome vote, and he's not getting their vote, a very, very crucial part of the electorate.
Oh, man.
It's sadness all around, Tom.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, good luck to Mitt on that choice, and I'm sure that'll rally the Tea Partiers even faster and quicker to jump on his side and really get going with him. But
It's a two-part. If you go on dubprogressive.com now, you'll get the second half, which explains more about this woman's history. You know, her parents were entrepreneurs. Tom, are you there?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay, it just sounded like you. It always sounds like you hung up. I'm like, oh my, oh Jesus, I'm not that bad.
I've walked away. I can't take it any longer. I give up.
Yeah. Well, her dad tried to, you know, when they moved here in 1970, she was born in 72. Her dad tried to create the nation's first scrub and scurry business. That's on part two. The first two-part expose Dub Progressive has ever done. It's a scrub and scurry business. It was catering to motorists who were in such a hurry that they couldn't stop to have their cars washed. And I can't even say it. Demanding that someone hang on to the outside of their vehicles and wash them while they were in motion. Now, unfortunately, her dad was killed when he was thrown from a car, so that career, that endeavor didn't last too long. But it's on the dubprogressive.com now, and I think she's just the perfect choice. But the tree snail racing gambling addiction, that is going to, I think, give her some problems, you know. But at least she's...
It'll help with the Nevada crowd and the Florida with all our casinos here in Florida. I'm sure the gamblers will like that. But and in fact, you may have just opened up a whole new problem. People are going to go, hey, let's go find a tree snail race and check it out and see how it's going. So you may have just helped the business.
Well, you know what they say: once you snail, you never bail.
Oh gosh. Well,
she went to rehab for it. Ms. Martinez, you can read in the article. She went to four ladies. She had to go to rehab for it in the early 90s, and now she's been snail free for 19 years, it says. So.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But it's kind of the how much time do I have left, by the way?
You got 30 seconds. I'm kidding. Yeah. You got more than that.
Well, it was the strangest thing. In researching for this article, I came across, in all seriousness, the Register of Wills for Howard County, Maryland, the county that I grew up. And it says, the Honorable Byron E. McFarland was the first elected Register of Wills for Howard County in 2000. He is the 18th Register and first openly gay elected official in Howard County history. Byron is a member of the blah, 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 and who the hell cares? What in the heck does being gay have to do with being the Register of Wills?
Yeah, exactly.
Why go out of your way to mention that? And down here, it's been, the theme was, for my the whole bit tonight, was sort of gay, because June is Gay Pride Month, and I'm right down here in the thick of it, down here in DuPont Circle, Washington, D.C., and everything's covered in rainbows and all that. And it never ceases to amaze me. These people are more concerned about their sexuality than I am.
Uh-huh.
I really don't care. And when you don't care, you don't go out of your way to mention it. It's like, I don't care if you're black. Now, if I do stand up and I crack a joke at black people, that's to get a rise. That's for humor purposes. But just in everyday conversation, hi, how's it going today? You know, oh,
yeah.
Beautiful day. I'm not going to go have a beautiful day and you're black. You know, I'm not going to be like, oh, beautiful day outside. And by the way, I'm straight.
Yeah, exactly. What about
Go
the
ahead,
next Registrar of Wills? Did it say comes from a long line of non-gay, you know, Registrar of Wills? I mean, you know, it's exactly it. If you throw that out there, for example, if I ran for office and said, oh, by the way, I'm straight, oh, I'd be a racist, bigot, terrible person. But here's what I see, and you have to understand that in the airline industry, I fly with a lot of gay flight attendants. And so I see a lot of really wonderful people and nice people and caring people and hardworking, industrious people. At the same time, I don't really care, but I do see a need from these activists, these gay activists, to try and make it normal, mainstream normal. It's not. It just isn't. That's just the way it is. It's not. And but they really have to try and go out of their way to make it. It's like instead of hiding it, they're doing the exact opposite, parading it on display as much as possible so they can try and make it mainstream for everybody else who really doesn't care.
It's doesn't have to do with accept. It's sort of like they've been in this, and let's be honest, they've had it rough up until the beginning with the whole Stonewall incident. I believe that was in 69, if my pre-birth memory is correct. Yeah, but since then, things have been gradually getting better and better, and now it's come to the point where, okay, by and large, as a society, we accept you. It's time to move on now. That means not saying, quote, Byron E. McFarland, .. He was the 18th first openly gay elected official. And who the hell cares now? Now it's you who cares. Now it's you. It's like they'll want to keep broadcasting it until you say, enough already, I get it. And then they can claim, oh, you're annoyed. Oh, well, you're a bigot. And it's all the way back to square one, because it's like they have to keep on this. They're so used to having this war footing, this struggle mentality, that they cannot accept actually being accepted.
Yeah, it's almost like they don't want to be accepted. So, everybody's got to have a project, a cause. And it's kind of like, as you said, their cause is over. It's over. But they can't let go of it, because that's all they know, their cause. So they just keep pushing forward, and it's starting to make them look sort of ridiculous, I would say.
Well, struggle is power, and as long as you're struggling and you're on this struggle, war footing mentality, the leaders of the movement, whatever it be, they maintain power. It's kind of like the going all the way back to the Animal Farm days, where it's in this constantly struggling for dominance. There's always some sort of goal that we have to achieve, and there's a new struggle on the horizon. And guess what? You've achieved what you wanted, and let's move on. Okay, you're straight. You're gay, and I'm straight. What was that old line Larry the Cable Guy said in his stand-up? He was, I was stuck in a gay pride parade. They say, we're queer and we're here. And he's like, well, I'm straight and I'm late. Get the hell out of my way. By the way, I'm not advocating this thing, but if you want to become a homophobe, just come down here when they have their gay pride parade and get stuck in traffic. That is the fastest way to become anti-gay as possible, is be stuck in traffic for 3 hours. Okay, you've had your gay pride parade. That's fine. Okay, I accept you. Okay, can we have it through your living room next year? No, you can't have a gay pride parade through my living room. Oh, my God, you're a bigot. We're back to square one.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, all right, can you give us a preview of what you're going to be talking about next week? Or have you decided yet?
Well, as you know, summer began yesterday. Was it yesterday or today?
Well, I don't know.
Who cares? It doesn't matter. It's hot as hell out. That's all. that's all I know. Lemonade stands. There's a lot of controversy with lemonade stands, and I think there will be some big, big federal news breaking concerning lemonade stands nationwide next week. That's just that's what I'm getting. That's what's trickling in down through the Progressive email.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That's basically it. But I urge everyone to go to dubprogressive.com, check out the Mitt Romney's running mate, and check out the commentary by this this poor guy who was forced to kill and eat his gay lover because of Rick Santorum.
Okay. All right. So I'm sure all the Rick Santorum supporters are going to be rushing to that. But no, they don't need to read that. But the other stuff is great. It's all great. I know the Rick Santorum people. I was a supporter of Rick Santorum. I actually worked on his campaign for a while there. And, yeah, some hardcore, you know, religious and conservative kind of people, good people to be around, like just the kind of people you want to be around if, you know, you need some help with something. But in any case, all right, Nick, well, pleasure as always. Thanks for coming on the show tonight, and we look forward to you next week. We've got same kind of a deal going on next week with Congresswoman Sandy Adams coming on, probably have her on for about half an hour, talking about the campaign, and more specifically, because she's in the thick of it, what's going on, really. I know she can't tell us totally what's going on behind the scenes, but she can probably give us some tidbits of what's going on in Congress, in the House, in the Republican Party, and her ideas on where we need to go to move on forward from here. So, in any case, Nick Taxia, DubProgressive.com. Thanks so much. Always a pleasure having you on, and we look forward to you next week.
No problem, Tom. Thank you so much.
All right. All right. I want to do a plug for a neighbor of mine. His website is called PatrioticJew.com. PatrioticJew.com. Ron Morgenstern, and he's got a quote on his business card here that from Ronald Reagan, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction, and it goes on, but I'm just going to read that first line. And you know what? We are the generation, John. We are the generation that is going to prevent the extinction of liberty and freedom, because if we don't
exactly
do something
right
in this upcoming election, that's precisely what's going to happen to our kids and grandkids. So we've got a president.
And that's what people, not to interrupt you, but that's what people need to remember when they're deciding whether they should go out and volunteer, they're deciding whether they should make those extra phone calls or knock on those extra doors. Every little bit helps. And, you know, there's a big cause that we're fighting for, and it's for liberty. It's for our Constitution. We're trying to preserve the values and the, you know, and what the founders' beliefs, really. I mean, it's what our founders went through so much to establish a constitution like the one we have, and it's why we're the greatest nation in the world. And to see it under fire with this administration, specifically with these executive orders lately, I mean, there's just no this president has zero respect for this constitution. So this election is going to be it's going to mean a lot for the future of this country.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you just segued into what I wanted to talk about here. I'm going to do a couple things. I'm going to read from an article that I sent to American Thinker. They're looking at it. They actually responded to me. Don't know if it's going to get published or not. If not, I'll find someone else to publish it. But I wanted to take – it's called The Tale of Two Garcias. I want to just read one paragraph out of there when it comes to this amnesty that the president recently has granted. And we have to actually start off with saying a couple other things first, and that is the administration is saying that this is just simply prosecutorial discretion. Now, there are limited resources, and anybody can tell you there are limited resources in the State Department and Immigration Bureau in terms of how they handle illegal immigrants. They can't deport everybody, and they've got to go for the worst offenders slash, you know, who they have resources to deal with.
Right.
That's called prosecutorial discretion on both the part of the law enforcement officer who finds somebody, does he turn them over to ICE or not, and also on the part of a judge determining whether somebody's deported or not. The problem is the president's decree, and he actually didn't write an executive order, as far as I can tell. They keep talking about an executive order. He had Janet Napolitano write the letter to the various departments outlining this.
Basically saying, don't enforce this law.
Right. So it's not discretionary. It's mandatory discretion. There's no such thing as mandatory does not equal discretion. So it's mandatory, which means he's not only violating the law, but he is creating new law, and he has no authority to do that. So my question for all of the Latinos and Hispanics, which I refer to as Americans of Hispanic heritage, because if you're a citizen and you think Barack Obama is the guy you should be voting for, let me just make a very important point. And I'm going to ask a question, and then I'm going to expound on it. I've got one paragraph out of my article. This is really kind of a shift from the article, but I wanted to throw this in the article and make sure I got it out there. And somebody, I was going to pull it up, but somebody actually put out an article on this entire subject. I think it was on American Thinker as well. But I have a serious question for those Americans of Hispanic heritage. Are you willing to put your personal bias ahead of the best interest of this nation? You are here most likely because you or a predecessor left a socialistic quasi-dictatorship for a country, our country, that follows the rule of law in our Constitution. Is this a significant enough issue that it is worth allowing the president to violate the rule of law? Is this you were searching for? Another socialistic quasi-dictatorship? You may not find the next violation so agreeable, but it will be too late. No more constitution to protect you. And the bottom line
is, I just
want to
chime in real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to chime in. If anybody wants to call in and give their opinion on this, we would love to hear from you at any time. So.
Yeah, and of course, if you don't have the number to call in is 310-982-4145. That's 310-982-4145. So the point of all this is, what happens when the next president comes along and says, oh, we want to thank all of you people for coming out of the shadows, telling us who you are, getting your work permit, et cetera. Now we know who you are. Guess what? We're deporting you tomorrow. Now, you know what the Latino activist groups are going to do. They're going to go, you can't do that. The president has no power to do it. You can't do that. So which is it? He can or he can't? You've got to be careful what you allow the government to do. Just because it works for you today, it may not work for you tomorrow. So with that said, let's talk about another violation of the Constitution and the rule of law. And that is this whole gun running aspect. You know, public statements made by both Eric Holder and Janet Napolitano indicate that they were both personally, they said this in their own words, that they were both personally working on the issue of stemming the flow of guns into Mexico before the president even took over office. That's where it was discussed initially, and within the first month, they said they were both working on it. And yet, what do we end up with? The exact opposite. So this is either outright conniving on their part or just total incompetence. But I want to read what the president said to the president of Mexico when he met with him just before he took office. President-elect Obama expressed support for efforts in the border states in both the United States and Mexico to eradicate drug-related violence and stop the flow of guns and cash. He told President Calderon, now this is coming from the press secretary, Gibbs, remember him? Yeah, he was a real winner there. He told President Calderon that he intends to ask the Secretary of Homeland Security, that being Napolitano, to lead an effort to increase information sharing to strengthen those efforts. He pledged. How many broken promises do we have from this president? Pretty much every single one of them. He pledged to take more effective action from the United States to stem the flow of arms from the U.S. And what did we end up with? We assisted the gun runners. We assisted the drug cartels. So what I'm going to do now is play a soundbite that has Eric Holder talking about this issue way back when, in terms of what he was working on already and going to work on and how important it is. Then I've got a little blurb of my own commentary in the middle. And then let's see what the president has to say about presidential discretion or what's the right word? John, help me out here.
Presidential privilege?
Privilege, yes. Why can I never remember that word? Presidential privilege. He just evoked that to save the hide of Eric Holder or maybe his own. But we'll hear what he has to say about President Bush using it and how he thinks it's a bad way to go. Come on, if there's nothing to hide, why are you doing this? And I do have to say that in the case of President Bush having or the Justice Department firing all of the federal attorney generals across the country, I think they replaced almost every single one of them, if not all of them. He has the authority to do that. The president has the authority. He doesn't need anybody's permission to do that.
And he wasn't the first president to do that.
Right. And yet,
so,
the Democrats wanted to know, well, what you can't.
Right.
You know, they wanted to know why. Why? Well, now we have a case of gun running against what the president pledged, against what the attorney general and the Homeland Security secretary pledged, and people died. And they don't think that's important enough. It's a small matter, and they don't have to give us answers. So let's take a listen to this, and then I'll get your take on it, since I've already, you know, gone over this and got my commentary. But see what you think about this, John.
ATF is doing all that it can to ensure that we stanch the flow of those weapons to Mexico. As good partners, I think that is one of the things that we have to do.
And yet his department did exactly the opposite. They assisted in getting guns to drug lords in Mexico so that more Mexicans could die, and unfortunately a couple Americans died as well. It's unfortunate that anybody died, but they did exactly the opposite of what they said they were going to do. So now President Obama has invoked executive privilege so that Congress can't get to the bottom of this scandal, can't get to it. Well, what did candidate Obama think about using executive privilege?
You know, there's been a tendency on the part of this administration to try to hide behind executive privilege every time there's something a little shaky that's taking place. And I think, you know, the administration would be best served by coming clean on this. There doesn't seem to be any national security issues involved with the U.S. attorney question. There doesn't seem to be any justification for not offering up some clear, plausible rationale for why these U.S. attorneys were targeted when, by all assessments, they were doing an outstanding job. I think the American people deserve to know what was going on there.
So, what do you think, John?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I just referred back to a 2007 interview with CNN host Larry King. He had presidential candidate Obama on, and President Obama had said at that point that the American people deserve to know what was going on there, and he was referring to President Bush's executive order. He referred to it as, he said that President Bush was had hid behind the executive privilege every time there's something a little shaky. So just those two quotes right there, I mean, it's total hypocrisy. He says that the American people deserve to know what was going on there. This president has been the least transparent on the Fast and Furious scandal. And I mean, I can't even believe it. He hasn't said a word on it. He's kept his mouth completely shut. He's hoping that it's going to pass over. And I think that, I think that the president's going to have a hard time going into an election year not talking about a scandal that clearly defies what the office of the president is all about. And I think Attorney General Holder should resign. I think this is a terrible thing for the United States. I don't think that this is constitutional. And I can't believe that the president has chosen to protect the Attorney General with executive order.
Yeah, well, I think he's not just protecting the Attorney General. I think he's more than happy to throw anybody in their bus. He has no allegiance whatsoever, I don't believe, to anybody. So my take is the fact that he's not throwing them under the bus is that he and or his staff are involved and can be incriminated in this whole thing. So I want to go back to...
Well, that's my opinion, too, exactly. I mean,
yeah.
I think he's protecting the Attorney General, but I think if he didn't protect the Attorney General, then more information would leak out that would link him to the scandal,
right,
and it would become a problem on his watch.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, if he throws him under the bus, but then Holder's got some information on the president, I mean, that's
exactly
bad.
Right,
then
that's
bad. I've been predicting this. As a little aside, I've been predicting this. When Obama loses, the books and information that's going to come out on just how corrupt this guy is just
all his
amazing.
They have
amazing.
Nothing to lose once he's out.
They'll have nobody to fear anymore. Yeah.
Exactly. And you're gonna. This is similar. This is like Dick Morris. You know, he was an aide for Bill Clinton. You know, now he is one of the most staunch conservatives that we've ever seen. He's on Fox News all the time giving commentary. The attitudes that liberals have when they get in power, you know, they talk about wanting to protect people, certain sectors of people, those less fortunate. Do you know that they are probably the most corrupt individuals when they get in the office? I mean, just look at Bill Clinton. Just look at President Obama. I mean, there's corruption everywhere.
Right. Well, you know, one of the interesting things that Holder said is the ATF is doing all it can, when in fact it wasn't doing all it could. It was doing the exact opposite. So what that tells me from a leadership perspective is you've got a guy who's clueless about his Department of Justice. Clueless.
Yeah.
Or he knows something and he's lying. Either way, it's not good. It's like, hey, let's just say you've got a business and you want to hire somebody. And I say to you, John, hey, I got this guy that I'd like you to hire to work for you. He's really I can't figure it out. He's either really stupid or he's very conniving. It's one or the other. But you know, because he always screws stuff up, and he's either doing it on purpose or he's doing it not on purpose, he's stupid. Neither one of those reasons is a good reason, stupidity or conniving. So Holder is either really stupid, doesn't know anything about his department, or he's conniving and was a part of this whole thing. Then the president says that Bush was using executive privilege anytime
I'll quote it. He said he's using executive – he's hiding behind executive privilege every time there's something a little shaky. That's what said about President Bush.
Now, by their own terms, this administration has called the Fast and Furious not that big a deal. In not exactly those words, but that's kind of the way they said, look, what are you talking about? It's not that big a deal. I mean, we're working on it. So would that qualify as a little shaky? A little shaky? So
yeah,
he's
exactly.
Hiding behind executive privilege on something that by their terms is a little shaky. But I think most Americans think it's very shaky. So that goes beyond his little shaky kind of discussion. And then finally it's like, can you offer a plausible reason for doing this kind of stuff? Hey, can you offer a plausible reason for gun running to Mexico and getting people killed? They can't offer a plausible reason. So President Obama is really good. You probably noticed this since he was a candidate and now is president. He's really good at dishing out advice, really, really good at telling people how they ought to live and what they ought to do and how they ought to react to things, et cetera, except he doesn't follow any of his own advice ever.
Yeah, it's similar to Michelle Obama telling you to watch your calories while she's pounding down ice cream cones.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, I think we've covered most everything we wanted to, unless you've got something else you want to talk about, John.
No, I sure don't. I would call upon the mainstream media to actually start reporting on this Fast and Furious scandal. I think it's it's important to the American people. This is a terrible incident that's happened, and it's a shame that Fox News is the only one that has the courage to actually, do investigative journalism.
Yeah, it's been going on a long time, and the mainstream media now is reporting on it, but just like, hey, there's this thing, Fast and Furious, going on, Republicans are using for political purposes. Yeah, but they're turning it into Republicans are using it for political purposes. Hey, the whole Valerie Plame thing that the media went after with full guns a-blazing, and the Democrats were all over. It turned out that it was nobody in the administration, and it was Dick Armitage was involved in that, but nobody in the administration. Oh, it was somebody that worked for Colin Powell. And Colin Powell, oh, I had no idea. Yeah, I think it was Dick Armitage working for Colin Powell. But it wasn't a White House issue, as it turns out. And yet, they go after, make a big deal out of it, somebody who's not actually undercover, nobody died. I'm not saying it wasn't a big deal, and I think, there were some issues about that leak, but, now we're talking about leaks. What about all these national security leaks? They're trying to make those sound like, they're no big deal, no big deal. This administration, every time they screw up, it's no big deal. But whenever a Republican screws up in any way, it's a huge, massive deal. If a Republican stubs his toe, and of course, the two times that Eric Holder and his department have lied, they misspoke. I'm going to have to remember that one next time. Well, first of all, I don't lie, but if I ever find myself in a jam, I'm just going to say, I misspoke. I misspoke.
Yeah.
It's always a misspeak to them. It's never a lie. Well, they're liars. They are liars. And I've said this, you and I haven't spoken in a while, but I've been telling people on the show for the last year, you are going to see the Democrats and this administration lie like you've never, ever seen politicians lie before. They are going to, if they have to tell you the moon is made of cheese, they'll tell you that with a straight face and try and make you believe it. We are going to see lying like never, ever before. So anyway, all right, John, we'll be back next Thursday, same bat time, same bat channel with Congresswoman Sandy Adams. I think it's going to be a really good interview because, yes, she's running for re-election, but she's not just a candidate. She's there in the thick of it. She has she's one of the few congressmen or women in Congress that has made every single vote since she's gotten elected. She's not missed one single vote, and I think there's a lot to be commended on that.
I agree.
And
she's a great patriot.
Yeah. So So it'll be fun to interview her and get her insight on things. And she is, because of her law enforcement background, I believe she's on the Congressional Judiciary Committee, if that's the right committee, because she has grilled Holder in the past and made him look like a puddle of mush. So that'll be fun to talk a little bit about that. So anyway.
Yeah, we'll get her take on that. Sounds great.
Yeah, it'll be fun. All right, my friend. Well, thanks for helping out tonight, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you so much. Bye now.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.